On today's episode of Rice, we'll be discussing the intersection of Asians and Black culture, debating hot topics including the U.S. election and Sean Connery's legacy, and reviewing Asian movie classic Rush Hour starring Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker. What up, Asian listeners, and welcome to Rice, Asian comedy podcast, where we share the Asian perspective on entertainment, culture, and trending topics. I just realized I said the word Asian like 500 times in two sentences. I'm your host, Vong Sho, official spokesperson for gay, super cute Asians. And on today's panel, we have Leonard Chan.
Hello, happy to be here.
And the always lovely and gorgeous Veronica Antipolo.
Oh my God, I love that introduction.
Hey. Leonard is also gorgeous. Let's not discriminate.
I mean, I like being an afterthought. It's my favorite. like it's like after you do a stand-up set, somebody comes up and like compliments the person like next to you, and they're like, "Oh, you were good too."
Yeah.
It's like, no, you clearly don't mean that.
let's transition straight into our main topic of the week, which is tied into our movie of the week, which is Rush Hour. So to tie into that movie, our topic of the week is the intersection of Asians and Black culture, and in what ways Black culture and Asian culture influence each other, and why do we think this is the case? Let's start with Veronica.
Yes, start with the Asian, with mixed race children who are half Black. I love that you referred to Rush Hour, by the way, as a classic movie. I was like, oh, maybe I should say it's my favorite movie. Are we talking about the movie first, or are we talking about the intersectionality of Black and Asian culture?
We're talking about intersectionality first.
Okay, yes. So here, I think that Asian culture appropriates Black culture more than it does appreciate it. Because have you seen those Japanese perms where they're trying to mimic an afro? What the hell is up with that? You're basically frying your hair you can't call that appreciation to like mimic someone's natural hair texture. And that's been going on for how long now? And people sit there for 7 hours to basically kill their hair. I know in Japan, even 20 years ago, there was a big dance hall scene there. So, I mean, I think that I'll call appreciation. In terms of intersectionality, I mean, Asians are everywhere. So we're going to intersect with whatever culture. Mm-hmm. Whatever country you go to, there are in Pembroke, where that old lady got beat up, there's Asians there. You see what I'm talking about? So we're always going to influence each other. I'm not so sure. I think it's just we're both. Asians are a model minority.
Asians are the Borg. Is that what you're saying? Yeah, Asians are the Borg.
Yeah,
pretty much.
How about, you know, maybe I'll redirect the question a little bit to Veronica, of like, how has a Black culture influenced your life as an Asian woman?
Oh God,
she has.
Well, I have two children that are half Black, so they've influenced me heavily. But I have to, okay, maybe it's different because I'm...
They infiltrated her vagina.
They invaded my vagina several times. But
it's
different
because... That was a really good night.
It was a good 10 minutes, yeah. 10 minutes. Yeah, maybe five, anyhow. And that's together, both children. I will say that I don't know if it makes a difference that I'm Filipino, but I know that as a Filipino woman, that I've often found that I don't know where I belong, whether I'm Asian or other, because we were called Pacific Islanders for a good chunk of time. I don't even know if we still refer to ourselves that way. I'm always confused. I'm like, I don't know how, what to call myself. I think I just slide under the radar for Asian. I don't know where else to go. So growing up, I was always aware of this because in the 70s and 80s, there weren't that many Filipinos yet at that time. And I didn't know where to go. So I just went with any other person of color who in my area happened to be all the Black people. And so that's how I was heavily influenced by that. I mean, my music, the way I speak, obviously my vagina, as Leonard mentioned.
They can be more specific
and
say uterus.
My uterus, the whole thing was invaded and influenced by Black culture. In fact, it's so a part of me that I don't even know where I start as an Asian woman and where the influence of Black culture begins or ends. It's just all a blur. Also, too, I grew up in Scarborough, so I know people say that as a default, but it is true. Scarborough is... its own thing.
I'll jump in. So I grew up in Winnipeg, as people know, the murder capital of Canada, and I always refer to it as growing up in the ghetto. And the interesting thing in Winnipeg, and it's different now, but when I grew up, there wasn't really a high Black population. Like, our school of 1,000 had one Black kid and two white kids. So it just, I just grew up in like a very heavily Asian dominated area. Actually, I think half of our school were Filipinos. So, And then, you know, 40% was, you know, Chinese, Vietnamese, Lao, Thai, all that kind of stuff. And the other 10% were made up of that one Black kid, the two white kids, and then some indigenous students. So it's kind of interesting because I feel like I relate a lot to what's being put out there presented as Black culture in North America, because I feel like hip hop culture and all that and what they're speaking about really resonates with anybody who grew up poor, even though I didn't grow up with, you know, Black people in my school. But certainly like the music, the rage, what they're fighting against, like police brutality, all that kind of stuff. Like, I remember, like, in my neighborhood, it's not a neighborhood where you call police. Like, police were just more of like an occupying force that came. So, like, obviously the music resonated for me that way, you know, with like the early hip hop music was really talking about that. So it is kind of interesting that I wasn't directly influenced by meeting people in person, but the culture definitely did influence me. And also, you know, like definitely, you know, I think Black culture is one of the biggest exports coming out of North America, you know, certainly bigger than, say, country music. Which is like, it's popular in America only. It didn't really export very far. You know, obviously, I love basketball. A lot of Asians love basketball. There's a lot of different things. I would actually say I do think it goes both ways, though. And hear me out, because I do love hip-hop culture. And I know a lot of people are mad at, like, K-pop or J-pop because they say that it's appropriating Black culture. But I actually think that there's a lot of influences going both ways. Because, like, hello, hip-hop culture, Wu-Tang Clan, Busta Rhymes calls himself the Dragon. I feel like, you know, like, especially I would say, like, the female rappers, you know, like, Nicki Minaj had a song called Chun-Li, but even if you don't take the song, if you even look at her aesthetic, which I know that she stole from, you know, from previous rappers like Lil Kim and all that. But, like, those wigs are, like, straight out of, like, an anime convention, basically.
And Lil Kim is Korean, right?
Yeah.
She is now.
So
that's what she looks like now.
So I definitely think there's an appreciation that goes both ways. I think it's a little bit tricky because I know, like, both cultures are just really protective of – their culture and our culture being stolen and appropriated. Like, I know, like, when Bruce Lee first came here, people were really mad at him that he's, like, teaching kung fu to, like, white people. So I do think that comes into play. But the interesting thing with, like, Black and Asian culture, I think I relate to what you're saying, Veronica, where it's, like, I think it's different when it's two minority groups that are appreciating each other and having influence over each other versus, like, the dominant culture, like, white people coming in. Like, I'm more offended at, like, Eminem than I am at, like, you know, hip-hop influence going into, like, K-pop. You know what I mean? Because it's still...
Black people and Asian people getting together and appropriating each other's culture so that we can create art that takes all the white people's money. How's that? That's good.
You know, you know what? I went to Florida once when I was 23, and I remember I went out to a club, and I remember these black dudes came up to me, and they were like, "How come you know how to dance? You're Asian." And I was like, what?
Well,
get that too.
Well, little do they know.
I break dance, right? Which is like
that's true.
Primarily like an African American style of dance. And
yes, yeah.
You know, like, this is the thing. Like, Asians have cool shit. Black people have cool shit. Let's just put all the cool shit together. All right, let's
cool shit together.
I mean, honestly, art, right? Art is about stealing from the best. That's all. It's just stealing. Right? And making it your own. That's it. It's just to steal from better people. That's all you got to do to be a better artist.
And our food. Our food has borrowed heavily from each other. So.
Yeah, you know what the funny thing is? I never had... I don't even know what it's called. Like Southern comfort food before I moved to Toronto. Chicken and waffles, and then there was this place next to where I live called Harlem's. It's closed now.
Oh, yeah.
But it's soul food, and I had never had soul food before, and I tasted it, and all I could think of was, like, the flavors are very reminiscent of Thai food. Like, their sweet chili sauce, I was like, because obviously, like, my parents ran two Thai restaurants, and I was like, this sweet chili sauce is, like, straight out of Thailand. So I was like, I'm loving these flavors. It's obviously something I'm used to. But yeah, no, definitely I get what you're saying with the food part of it. And so let's head on over to Leonard, if you have further thoughts on how Black culture has influenced you.
Well, I mean, similar to you, you know, I love basketball, I break dance, mm-hmm. I love R&B, like, I sing. I love a lot of aspects of Black culture, just like a lot of people love that. And I also love Asian culture. I love, there's certain aspects of white culture. There's all sorts of culture that I like. If you look deep enough into anything, there's always something cool. And I think it's too bad that people are so, I mean, I understand if people appropriate it and they're like, oh, this is ours now, right? But that's mostly white people. They're like, oh, look at this. This is our land now.
Well, it's fine. Yeah.
But, like, if you give credit where credit is due, you know, it's like, oh, this is primarily, you know, a Black art, but, like, I'm going to put an Asian spin on it. But I'm not saying it's mine. It's still a Black art. You know what I mean? Like, for example, you know what I really love, like, I've been getting into is, like, Shanghai jazz.
Oh.
Which is like, but it's basically, you know, like, it's jazz, which is probably, again, it's like, you know, from Black culture. But, like, you know, they kind of put like an Asian spin on it. And there's like, some of it's sung in Mandarin, and it's like just, actually though, if you, Ronnie Chang, his special on Netflix, I think he opens like with some Shanghai jazz.
In the party scene in Crazy Rich Asians, they brought one of the most popular Chinese jazz artists to perform at that.
Yeah, that final and I think scene. it's you know, I mean, I wish there were more Asian rappers like Jin. Remember Jin?
No,
nobody.
Okay. I know. Rain. Rain is.
Rain. I remember Rain.
Yeah.
No, Jin was the first and only, I think, Asian in to be admitted into Rough Riders.
Ah.
Do you remember Rough Riders?
I do.
Yeah,
I
remember Rough Riders. Wow.
Okay. Yeah. Jin had like one hit song. It was called Learn Chinese. Basically, he was just telling everybody he had to learn Chinese. And ironically, like, he actually speaks Chinese in the song, and his Chinese, I was like, your Chinese is horrible, dude. Stick with the rapping.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is what one of my favorite groups right now from K-pop is Blackpink, and they have they've got two rappers two out of the four girls can rap. Jennie, who I think is like okay at rapping, but actually Lisa, who's Thai, and her Thai name is La Lisa. She's actually like legit. Like, she raps in Korean, Japanese, English, Thai. Nice. She throws it all in. And I was watching like reaction videos, and it's kind of funny because here's another part of the intersectionality. Like, a huge part of the K-pop audience is Black. And so I'm watching this reaction video to Blackpink songs, and like, because I just kind of wanted to hear how the hip hop community thought of Lisa's like her rapping skills. So like, you know, there are a lot of like K-pop rappers who are more like Iggy Azalea, where it's like, okay, you trying, but just stop, girl. Like, just stop.
Yeah. But like, you know what? Yeah. You're not the realist.
No. but seriously, Lisa from Blackpink, she's got the flow. Like, that's why I was like, okay, let's go watch some reaction videos. And there's like a lot of hip hop reaction channels on YouTube that are starting to like cover Blackpink. And I was glad to see that they they were feeling her flow, because she's like legit good. Like, obviously it's a bit different because with K-pop, you don't write all of your own things. Other than, I know like BTS has a bit more control because of like their company, whatever, Big Hit or whatever, gives their K-pop artists more control. But Blackpink is with YG, and, you know, I don't think Lisa's writing all her own raps, even though she is trained to. But, like, for the actual flow, I think, like, she's super, super legit. Like, I, like, look her up. She's fabulous. And, you know, shout out to all the Thai people.
Oh, yeah, I'm supposed to watch that document. It's on my list of things.
Yeah.
I mean, they literally have Black in their name, if you want to talk about...
Yeah. And they train for so long.
It's like, insane. They start with them, like, 14 crazy. Or something. Like, if they fuck up, it's like, oh, I didn't go to high school. Oh, no. Yeah. Like, I know, I sing and dance.
So, exactly. So you better be legit. Yeah,
they're screwed. It's crazy. It's like trying to get the NBA, but you don't even go to university and get a degree.
But I mean, I guess it's the same, like, as all, whatever, artists. They train them from when they're young. Look at the Jackson 5.
Yeah. That worked out well.
No, that's definitely true. Go ahead, Leonard.
Well, I'm just saying, I think going back to the, you know, say, like, as long as you're celebrating the culture, right? That you're, there's a difference between appropriating the culture and saying, oh, this is mine, versus like, oh, I think this is cool, and this is not mine, but I want to honor it. Yeah. And so I think you got to be good at it. You know, like, you got to put in the time to get good at that art, at that craft, at that, and understand where it comes from. Understand, because the thing is this, like, you know, like blues, for example, you know, like when Black people sing the blues, you feel it because they have something to be blue about. But that's not, you get like, you know, white people singing the blues, and like some white people, sure, it's like, yeah, I can see the struggle. But others, you're like, you didn't fucking see shit. Like, you didn't, nothing bad happened to you. You're just trying to, like, so much of like Black art comes from oppression, comes from that like generational, like, it comes from, you know, you got like spirituals, right? Like, you there's no white spirituals, you know? Who is it? Langston Kerman. He's this comedian. He has this amazing bit in his album where he talks about white spirituals, and it's like, wade in the water, wade in the distilled water. like he does. It's amazing. He does a great. I don't even remember those lyrics, but it was incredible, right? And it's just like, and because the art does come from struggle, it comes from experience, a lot of it negative. If you just take sort of like the superficial parts of the art, but without understanding the underlying part, that That's the problem. Absolutely. That's when it gets bad.
Yeah.
Right? So then you just have to, I think, if you want to do that art, you have to truly understand where it came from. And then also understand that maybe you can't do it because you don't have that experience. You don't have, you know, that struggle.
But those perms are not, there's no excuse for them. I'm standing my ground on those perms. It's ridiculous.
Okay, that's a great way to end the topic, Veronica. So we'll move on to our first hot topic of the week. And this hot topic is probably the hot topic in the world right now. We'll start with Leonard on the upcoming U.S. election that will be held on Tuesday. Goodness sake, Leonard, what is happening?
I mean, it's the prelude to a civil war. Yeah, we don't know what's going to happen. That's the thing. It's one of the, like, you know, everything says Biden's going to be up. But hey, we've been there before in 2016. It didn't work out particularly well. So the memories of that are still pretty fucking fresh. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. The fate of the world literally rests on this election. And I feel like that might be hyperbolic, but it isn't really. Like, it's not really.
It's not.
I don't think the world, like America, withstands another 4 years of Trump. Just does not. Like, it's already fundamentally changed America forever. Like, this is not going to be something that people forget. This is going to scar that country for the rest of its life. You know, like, because it's like King George III or Caligula, right? Like, this is the Mad King of America, you know? People don't forget that shit. It's interesting. Like, people put him in because they're like disenfranchised. He's like uneducated, disenfranchised white voters who, you know, put him into office. And now, you know what's funny is Biden has won them a lot of them back because they're like, oh shit.
Yeah, but
like, Trump is like the agent of change, and they're like, oh, we need the agent of please change it back.
But even if he's won them back, I was researching their voting system because I don't think I've ever understood it. And I was
like, the voting system is so fucked.
It's so stupid. I was like, this doesn't, I don't know much about politics, but I know that this is stupid. And I'm like, so it's not hyperbole. Literally, the fate of the world, shall we say, is in the hands of this election. Like, who the fuck knows?
And it's really like just three swing states. It's like Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and
it's ridiculous.
I forget, like, I don't know, Florida. Like, if Florida falls to Biden, then it's over, pretty much. But it's and it's so fucked up, right? Because like, the big thing, of course, is it's the mail-in ballots, right? Because it's a pandemic, and people are like, oh, we don't want to go out and like get the fucking coronavirus, which by the way, Trump, pretty much a pro-coronavirus president, right? Like, he's done more for coronavirus than any other president. Like, he's got coronavirus vote. Like, he's really allowed it to proliferate and thrive, you know? Like, tax cuts for corona, you know, it's great. because of that, like, we might not know the results on November 3rd, unless it's like a Biden landslide, but it just has to be close, and then I think Trump can start to challenge it. There are already, like, all these Supreme Court cases, like, trying to, like, stop them from counting the votes after November 3rd, which, by the way, is insanity, because they've always been counted after November 3rd.
It's crazy.
I think, Veronica, like, you researched the electoral system for, what, I'm sure, like, 10 minutes, maybe, and you know more about it than Trump already does.
Well, and that's the thing, is because that man has hid all his transcripts from whatever school, and it's like, this man is if you just listen to just audio, he just sounds insane and stupid. And after I had to reread things several times to understand the way they vote. And I, every time I thought, where does this make sense? It doesn't.
It doesn't.
It's like, scary. Scary.
You write about the electors, right? Like the electors.
Yes. Yeah.
It's so crazy. So like all these counties and the popular in the state ends up like, you have these electors, and these electors just, who are they? Who are these people? Random people. And they are supposed to be like, oh yeah, so the popular vote, that's who this goes to. But they could just be like, you know what, even though everybody in my state voted for Biden, let's just say Trump. Oh, and there's nothing to stop them from doing that.
No. Yeah, that's so crazy. And I'm like, I just think, how crazy is he that he could rig the mail-in votes?
Yeah, there's just so much craziness from, like, these fake postal boxes to voter intimidation, people going to polls with, like, friggin' guns being shown and all that to try and, like, scare people away.
Yeah.
Just anything they can do to suppress the vote. It's just, it's, you know, honestly, I think both of you are right. This is the fate of the world, because as much as we make fun of the U.S. sometimes, it's like, we need the U.S. to survive, because as messed up as the U.S. is, I'm sorry, Asians, but I do not need China as the world's only major superpower. Like, that is not, you know, even India, please, India, come up. I know India could be an economic power too. Like, we need more to balance each other. We cannot let China run wild. This is why China and Russia are pro-Trump.
China's actually pro-Biden.
What? Yeah.
What?
China and really? Iran, I believe, were doing things that were pro Biden, and Russia was doing things that were pro-Trump. But the things that China and Iran are doing are, like, nothing compared to, like, just how dedicated Russia is to, like, fucking up America.
Yeah, it's just all crazy. I actually had a serious conversation with my boyfriend where I was like, honestly, if Trump wins, I was like, I'm moving. I was like, we are going to the other side of the
ocean. Where are you going to go?
I was like, I don't know where I'm going to go.
You're
but
not in America. You're already where all the Americans want to move. If Trump
I know, exactly. No.
Okay, see, here's the thing for me. If Trump wins, like both of you said, I feel like it's a civil war. And we are too close to be next to a civil war. Because do you know what wars need? Resources. Canada has a lot of land and resources. Somebody going to run out of water. You know, California's going to run out of water. Come get Canada's water. I don't know. I know this sounds crazy, but I'm getting the hell out of here. I am not. This is too close.
Canada has the best snipers in the world. I think we're going to be able to pick them all off as they try to climb over the border, which is still closed, by the way. I think if Trump wins, even after a pandemic ends, just keep the border shut. Just keep them shut.
And he's not like, going quietly.
No. Oh, of course not. I mean, here's the thing, though. He's like most of the generals who have worked with him are pretty much against him. The Secret Service hates him. Like, even if he doesn't want to go quietly, I don't think there's anybody who's going to support him staying in office.
Oh my God.
Like, he needs the military on his side. Like, the only reason, like, the Germans, like, the shit that happened in Germany, that stuff only happened because, like, the German military is very small in comparison to all the people, the brown shirts that like Hitler had. He had way more people, you know.
Yeah.
So it would be like if Trump had like a billion Proud Boys, like just fighting for it.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
And who knows? Like, who knows how many people out there who aren't even revealing who they truly are because they work everything within the system. So that's what scares me, is like there's many people out there we don't know who work within the system, and we don't know about them because it's working for all these people.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, well, I'm getting too depressed. I feel like let's wrap up this topic because we're going to be talking about it next week, no matter what happens.
This
it's to be continued. But thanks for your thoughts on that, Leonard and Veronica. Let's move on to Veronica's first hot topic of the week. Amy Baron Cohen. What is going on, Veronica? What is happening?
So when she was nominated in and they had the hearing for her, it kind of coincided now I'm going to mix up their names. I have to look at my notes. Sacha Baron Cohen.
Just call him Borat.
Borat, yeah. So the second movie came out. And so he released the clip of Giuliani in that very compromising, humiliating video. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did.
It wasn't that bad.
So people,
It was just edited. What? Like, we honestly, I don't, I mean, it was bad, but it wasn't that bad. Like, you see, no, but like, you look, I mean, come on, man. Like, the guy is, I mean, you know what, the thing that is bad about it is, like, if I were 78 years old and I looked like Giuliani and I was that close to the American president, and then some woman was hitting on me, I would be suspicious. That's the bad part about it. But like, if honestly, like, absent all that, like, she was flirting with them. She was very much like putting out signs that's like, you know, I mean, honestly, if it wasn't for all that stuff, if it wasn't, I don't think it's like, I mean, maybe this is a horrible opinion, but like, I really didn't think it was that bad.
I don't know. No. It was the touching. It was the physical contact. Yeah. Even, you know, even outside of coronavirus, like, for example, y'all shouldn't be touching nobody. But even...
No, it's definitely creepy. It's definitely creepy, but I don't think it's, like, pedophilia bad. You know what I mean? It's just creepy old man bad.
Well, I mean, that's still creepy enough. Come on,
of course,
nerd.
But Giuliani is a creepy old man. It's like, this is accepted.
He put his hand down his pants. If I'm flirting with someone, I don't expect them to immediately put their hands down their pants.
She pulled his shirt out. Like, he could very well have been tucking it back in. I'm not saying he was. I'm not saying he wasn't. But it was edited in such a way that I feel like it's not out of the realm of possibility that he was tucking his shirt back in.
Yeah.
Well, in any case, that whole situation got mixed up with Amy Barrett.
No, Amy Coney Barrett.
Yeah, thank you, Amy Barrett. I'm doing it now too. Sorry, what were you gonna say, Bob?
Oh no, I was just gonna say, like, I can definitely see the editing on like the pants part, but I just think with a supposed 15 year old who was actually not 15, but you know, it's just
it was like the touching.
Touching of it, I was like, y'all, bitch, don't be touching 15-year-olds. Like, y'all, no.
I don't think he knew she was 15, first of all, because she was a reporter. Like, the context under which he was in that room with her, I don't think he would have thought she was 15. If he did know she was 15, then that's fucked up. But, like, I really don't think.
I've got to watch it again. I felt like they had informed him, but maybe not. Maybe they didn't until Borat jumped out of the closet.
Yeah, it's still creepy. Nevertheless, it's still creepy, and it's kind of funny that she's getting mixed up with this with Borat. And I just think, first of all, her even getting nominated is just ridiculous. Like, what the fuck is happening over there? Because even if a Biden wins, it's still like now the Supreme Court, it's now very much conservative now. And who knows what's going to happen. People are going to get coat hangers back. Yeah. Wire coat hangers are going to come back and we're all going to have to do that if we get.
Okay. Again, if they do overturn Roe v. Wade, all it means is that abortion is no longer federally protected, but there are still states. Like, that basically all it means is they're shunting the decision back to the states. So, yeah, if you live in Mississippi, you're probably fucked. Move.
I mean, or go to the dry cleaners and get some hangers. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, hopefully, I kind of feel like what's going to happen is, well, first of all, as everybody knows, I'm not a big Biden fan. Obviously, vote Biden if Trump is your only other choice. But, like, what I got mad is that Biden, you know, he was sidestepping this whole question about whether he was going to, like, you know, overstep the Supreme Court. If he wins the election. And the best thing he did at first, him, Biden and Kamala Harris, they were just avoiding the question. Because realistically, the best answer is, I ain't answering no bitch-ass theoretical question. Why don't you ask me a question about something real, like the Republicans stuffing it right now with Amy Coney Barrett. Like, hello, exactly. Bitches. Like, let's talk about reality. I ain't going to answer some hypothetical later. Let's talk about reality. That's how I'd answer that shit. But... you know, so Kamala Harris stuck to the script, but Biden, because he's known for campaign gaffes, he answered the question when he didn't need to, where he was like, yeah, I've always been against that. Just look up my... I was like, Biden, bitch, just shut up. You don't have to answer that question. Because I feel like what's going to happen is, I don't think he's going to do it right away, but I think what's going to happen is, if the courts start overturning things that are so against the will of the American public, then pressure will build. And then at that point, he'll just come in and be forced to, like, you know, change the makeup of the Supreme Court. I feel like that's how it's going to happen. So I'm not as worried. I feel like the public outcry would be so much. But I feel like he does need, like, that catalyst. I don't think he can just go into power and be like, okay, I'm going to, like, flip this script. I feel like something needs to get overturned. Or there's a major thing that gets voted on and it's just, like, totally out of control, that the American public has so much of an outcry that people won't be asking him, oh, are you going to stuff it? They're going to be like, bitch, stuff it. Stuff this shit.
Yeah.
Stuff this shit. Yeah. And then he'll change it.
But at just the same to make time, it more
even.
Yeah.
Is this, cause
to
right
make
now,
it more even, yes, yeah. Yes.
I mean, the but, whole point is, like, they should have term limits. All right, like, lifetime appointments is absurd because now you have.
Oh my God! Yes, she's only 48.
40-year-old Republicans, like conservative Republicans, like Kavanaugh's a partisan hack. Gorsuch has been actually a nice surprise. We'll see what happens with Amy Coney Barrett.
Right. No, bitch is crazy. I don't need to see. I've already heard enough from her.
Well, you know what? I'll say this: like, the fact that she didn't jump in onto the Pennsylvania case when she could have. People were asking her to recuse herself. She didn't recuse herself, but she also didn't make a judgment on that either. So I was, like, fully expecting her to write, because, like, Trump essentially said, oh, I'm going to need the Supreme Court to, like, throw away all these decisions and help us win this election. He said it, right? Which is 100% why people were like, yo, you got to recuse yourself, because, like, that is such a clear conflict of interest. And to her credit, she didn't rule on it. Like, she didn't recuse herself, but she basically said, I don't have enough time to read all this stuff, and this needs a quick decision, so I'm not going to say anything.
And which also, what a way actually, to...
Which was a nice surprise. A I really expected her to, like, you know...
Well, listen, the part that really turned me against her is somebody asked her a question flat out of, like, if your teachings or readings from the Bible conflict with... your readings of the law, which are you going to side with? And, like, for her to not be able to answer that.
Wait, what did she say? I didn't hear that. What did she say?
She didn't really answer. She was just kind of like, oh, I don't know. I'd have to think about it. I'll case by case. I was like, case by case, the Constitution versus the Bible. Like, bitch, like, you're not even a lawyer at that point. It's like,
well, she didn't answer anything.
No. Yeah. She kind of implied that she would not let it influence her, but not, it wasn't convincing, but also, isn't she an originalist, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, she's originalist, which means... So there's like this... People are like textualists versus originalists. Like, so for her, it's like, it's not what the words mean. It's like, what does she think the founders meant during that time? Well, here's the crazy thing. So she's originalist. Scalia was an originalist who...
That's right.
And I believe Gorsuch is as well. So here's the thing. Now you have these people on Supreme Court that they've... Like, this is all the Republicans wanted. Like, after Roe v. Wade, like, the Heritage Foundation, like, this has been their plan for 40 fucking years. And they did it, right? And they put in all these people, these originalists, who are now going to shape the country based on the will of a bunch of slave owners who didn't want anybody poor to have any power whatsoever. And, oh my God, America makes perfect sense now. Mm-hmm. Like, this is America. Makes sense. Yep.
That's right. And this is the thing, too, is I also feel like there's just almost, like, the sense of hopelessness. Yeah, we're in Canada, and I feel hopeless. And I just can't even imagine, like, so now the Supreme Court judges are all, mostly conservative now. And even if Trump goes, he will go. But if he goes, he's not really gone. The influence is there. It just feels
Oh, yeah, Trump, Trump TV coming up.
Yeah. Will anyone have anything left in them to fight anything anymore? That's the thing I'm actually, you know, nervous about.
Yeah, but we live.
You want to fight, but you're tired.
We live in Canada. The only thing that's going to bother me about it's all the environmental stuff because that affects everybody. But we can get it. You can get abortions. I mean, you aren't, but you could.
Well, just move with Vong to wherever he's going.
I'm out. I'm so out. I swear
to
God.
Where would you go?
Where are you going to go? Like,
yeah.
I don't know, but across the ocean. I need an ocean between me and this hot mess. I can't.
What are your options across the ocean that are any good right now?
There's no, yeah.
I mean, yeah, like Sweden is lovely, but you know, you ain't white.
Yeah.
You know what?
And they didn't lock down either.
I'm down with Denmark. I know it's full of white people, but it is the number one white country for badminton. So at least they've got some skills. So I'll go with that. That's the closest. And I think they've been voted the happiest place on earth, like outside of Disney World, like as far as countries go, like multiple times.
I've seen Hamlet. Those Danes, real happy people.
Okay, let's. Thank you, Veronica, for taking us to that topic. Taking us back to Canada, because I'm just too depressed talking about the U.S., but taking us back to Canada is Leonard's next hot topic, which is the COVID app in Alberta is not available or not for use. What's going on?
Okay, so the COVID Alert app, which is, the federal government released, and it's meant to help Canadians figure out if they've been exposed to COVID-19. The Alberta Premier is like, no, we're not going to let that in. They're calling it Trudeau's app. And they're like, we're not going to let that in. Like, are you kidding me? It's a free app that they developed, and it's good. It's actually a good app. Like, I've used it. It's fine. All the privacy issues that people are concerned about, like, they're not there. Like, you have to give Pizza Pizza more information to order a pizza than for this thing to do what it's supposed to do. For whatever reason, they are making this a partisan issue. You know, they're turning COVID into a partisan issue, which I really didn't want them to do that in Canada. Like, it's just insanity. And they're saying how they're like, because they, I guess Alberta had its own app, and they were like, well, we don't want to add this app unless we can like transfer those accounts over. And I was like, you didn't even have to open an account for like the COVID-19.
No, you don't.
You just put the app on your phone, you're done. It's a little bit crazy. I don't know if you heard, I actually used the app. I was working for 22 minutes and I opened the app because we were supposed to be interviewing Trudeau. And I was writing some joke questions for him and I opened the app and it said, I got exposed.
No, really?
And we had to shut down the 22 office. And,
oh my God.
And then it ended up making it all the way to Trudeau. Like basically during the interview, they were like, just before we end this interview, just want to let you know, one of our writers, he opened his app and it told me to expose. We had to shut down the whole office. So my next question is, I have no questions because all our writers are gone.
Well, it worked.
It worked.
Yeah. Leonard, patient zero of this hour.
Yeah. This is not ideal. It's not what I wanted, but it was funny at least.
Yeah, and weren't you the one who said you should give us thermometers? I remember when you started, didn't you say that?
Yes, and they did give us they gave us thermometers. They just never. I was just saying somebody should be there like to zap you with like the head thermometer, the thermometer gun. Mm-hmm. But they gave us like little thermometers, which I literally never used once. Only one writer I know used it, and then he wrote to me the other day, and he was like, "Did nobody do this but me?" I was like, "Yeah."
Because you got the app.
I got the app. Like, that's the thing. Like, the COVID Alert app is good. Everybody should download it. And I think it's crazy that they're not... And BC as well. And I'm actually not 100% sure why BC hasn't adopted it. I got to look into that. I'm sure it has to do with politics as well, but I don't know why. Mm. It's nuts, though. It's a good app. Download the app.
I did download... I'm going to be honest. So I downloaded it for about a week, and I got rid of it because I don't have room on my phone.
How do you know?
Veronica, oh, girl.
The app takes up so little space. What the fuck is on your phone that you can't... Like, it takes up so little space.
I have an Android.
But get rid of something else. Do you have TikTok?
No.
Okay, what do you have? Let's go through your phone right now. And let's get rid of an app.
I know. I have a whole bunch of... I know. It's very irresponsible. Of me, don't follow my what I do.
Such a small amount of data. It's so small.
Like, I don't
like all the things to get rid of.
I know. That was a mistake. Yeah, that was a mistake.
Like, I'm sitting in a boat and there's like Veronica. A fucking dog in a boat to get rid of a cat.
Veronica, you're being publicly shamed, but it's for the greater good. If we can publicly shame you and convince one person to download the app, hopefully that person is you, but other people as well.
No, you should download the app. The only reason that week I took it off as well, one of the other reasons I took it off is because it made me so anxious that one week. And I don't remember what was happening. I think I had to, I had to go get tested because we thought we had been exposed. And then my son is asthmatic, so we had to go to the hospital, and he was ruled out for COVID. But what happens is we didn't know if it was his asthma. So you can't just stay in there. You have to actually leave and come back because they won't just transfer you over now. You're either in there for COVID or other things. And I was like, I need to just remove this app for a second to not be this anxious. But I never downloaded it again. I know it's a bad excuse, very poor excuse. Don't follow this example. In fact, delete this segment, this part of it.
We are live, Veronica.
Delete this part of the podcast for space.
Closer.
We are very much live, but let's wrap up that topic there. I want to give a shout out to our commenter from Facebook, Peter German, who's saying this is so much fun. So it seems like Peter is enjoying our public roasting of Veronica.
Oh, it's going to continue. It will continue throughout the night. I just don't want to, what did you need space for? Like, what were you trying to put on your phone? You're like, well, clearly this has to go.
I don't even know, honestly. There's a whole bunch of shit on there. They're shit apps because I don't even know what the hell's on there, to be honest. And I'm with Freedom Mobile, which is a shit provider.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. It's like Freedom, it doesn't matter if you're on Freedom. The app runs on Bluetooth and Bluetooth alone. So.
Yeah. Well, I had it for three days.
Oh, that's great.
I said, do not follow my example. Do as I see, not as I do.
Or as you're about to. Let's end the topic by you promising that you are going to download the app and show it to us on your phone during the next episode.
Promise.
Oh, this episode, next episode. That's a week. She's gonna get COVID and spread it to how many people in a week? Do it right now.
Okay, yes. While we transition to the next topic, Veronica, definitely if you have your phone with you, you can start downloading the app. So the next topic is actually, we're heading back to Veronica for this topic, and it is about it's about multiple things, but it's spurred on by the recent death of Sean Connery, but also how people have been talking about him in his, in the recent days after his death and about his legacy.
Yeah, so Sean Connery died on Halloween, did he not? Was it on Halloween? So, people are, as they always do with celebrities, as they talk about his great work, his accolades, tribute. Like he was knighted. He's a sir, right? And some people are not happy that that's all they talk about is these great things that he's done, when they've ignored what he said on a Barbara Walters interview where he said, there's nothing wrong with giving an open-handed slap to a woman when she needs it. And he stood by that statement for years and only retracted it in 2006. And I think when he first did that interview was like in the 80s. Mm. So my thing is, I don't know where I stand, because I'm like, I don't know. When people die, do you just talk about the good about them? Is it cancel culture if we only talk about the bad that they did? Because they're human, even though they're celebrities. But then at the same time, say Trump dies. I don't know why he's still alive anyhow, with that corona. But when Trump dies, do we talk about all the great things he's done as president, which is not going to happen because he did nothing great, but
he made America great again. Come on.
He made America great again. Yeah. I feel like I don't know where I stand. I feel like I don't want to necessarily give accolades, but I don't want to highlight the greatness of someone when they've had a history of these misogynistic, these allegations of being misogynistic. Like, it doesn't sit right with me. Same with, like, Giuliani being creepy. I mean, it's just wrong.
I'm not saying I'm on board with Giuliani's creepiness. I'm just saying it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
there's like levels of creepiness.
It's just the way people were talking about it online. I was like, oh, for sure, this dude's going to be this whacking up in front of a teenager. But no, it was, you know.
It was just a little hand down the pants. But no,
it could have been innocent.
Yeah. But this happens all the time. Like, look at Michael Jackson. What? When he died, I know. Is there a lesser example? What happens when Bill Cosby dies?
Yeah, well, I think people are going to remember him as this terrible person. Because they remember, right? Like, he's done. Nobody's like, oh, man, the Cosby Show was great. Nobody's saying that. They pulled it off in the air. Like, no, they're still, okay. because he's in jail. Like, Michael Jackson died before he could have gone in jail, and he got off all that stuff anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's like, look. I think the lesson is you just have to die at the right time. That's
you
all.
Just have to die at the right time. Yeah.
That's Roy Wood Jr. bit, by the way. It's not me.
Yeah, I would say for me in recent history, I feel like Sean Connery is not as polarizing of a figure. I would say the most recent one where this really happened to me was Kobe Bryant.
I feel like that
broke the internet because people were like, do we talk about the rape accusation? Yes. Do we talk about, you know, how he treats his teammates, or do we talk about the fact that he's died, all the things he's done for the community and for basketball, and that his daughter died as well? You have people grieving, you have people shouting out his past transgressions. It was just like, it was like this craziness. I will say it kind of died down because, you know, it was right when he died, it got really contentious. But then after the Lakers won the championship and the Dodgers as well, they were like doing a lot of tributes to Kobe, and you didn't have like the counter, oh, but he's a quote-unquote rapist thing that was going on. So I don't know. I don't really know how I feel about it because...
Me too. I don't know either.
And I think that is the correct thing. I don't think there is any way to feel about it. I think how it is like, this person means to you what they mean to you. And for some people, Kobe's a goddamn monster, all right? For other people, Kobe's a hero. And that's fine. The people can be different things to different people based on how you perceive them, based on your own experiences. I think what matters is that you don't police what other people think. If somebody wants to celebrate Sean Connery, let them. Don't be like, but he slapped around women. It's like, then you privately condemn them, you know, whatever. Just let people grieve. Like, I mean, the guy just died. Like, on, like, the Kobe thing, same thing happened to me. Like, I posted some shit online where I was just like, you know, like, the thing about Kobe, like, and it was words of admiration. I mean, I know he's problematic. I acknowledged that, but people just went crazy on that status. I was like, well, at least it's nice to know who I have to delete from my Facebook. And, you know, and yeah, that's a thing. Like, I've done jokes about Kobe. Like, I've done, like, especially, like, you know, I have this stupid joke, but basically I was talking about Teen Wolf, right? Because it's like Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, yeah, Teen Wolf. It's like this story of this guy who, like, he turns into a monster and he hurts people, but people love him anyways because he's really good at basketball. It's like, sound familiar?
Okay, so yes, you're right. Sean Connery is not as polarizing, but it's still within the same vein. Like, at what point do you basically cancel someone in their death and just say, like, it's not worth it? And even, like, the example I chose, Bill Cosby, even as horrible as he was, I have to say, there was a point in television where it really mattered that those shows he put on were important.
Yeah.
I mean, that comment
he did more to normalize. I mean, this is controversial, but like he potentially did more to further civil rights than Martin Luther King, because he showed. Because he showed the African-American people, not the, like, a middle-class African-American family, and he wasn't talking about the differences. He was celebrating the similarities. And then that really did a lot to normalize relations between Black and white America. All right. Exactly. Like, it was the number one show. The Cosby was the number one show. He was beloved.
Yeah, those Thursday nights for the bomb.
Yeah, it's like it was like the Cosby Show, Family Ties, Cheers, and I forget what came after Cheers. But like, what a night that was!
A different world.
Oh, that's right, a different world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the
guy, yes.
Yeah, you can't forget about Denise Huxtable. Hello.
Yeah, no. It's really tricky. I will say that I'm generally not the one who will jump up and put my hand up as soon as somebody died and say, oh, but they did this and this. So I don't know. It's like what Leonard's saying. People are gonna feel how they feel. For me personally, even if I like hate a bitch, like if they die, I probably wouldn't use that moment to like smear them further personally, but you know, if other people want to, sure, go ahead. I'll say it's not my thing.
Just save it as a surprise, you know. Just wait till much later. It's like their birthday, they just blown out a candle on their cake, and they're like, oh, guess what, Sean Connery slapping women around.
Or get a good publicist that works until after your death to mitigate all those comments.
Did John Connery ever elucidate as to what the reasons were he thought it was okay to slap a woman around?
All he said is it was taken out of context. I'm not really sure what the context is, because he basically said that sometimes women can just keep going on and an open-handed slap.
Okay. Well,
I don't really know what context would make that better, but that's his story.
Well, it's kind of interesting because there is this thing of like, you know, domestic violence, men abusing women, stuff like that. But I will also say on the other side, I hate it when they have like a female in a action movie and they have to like bring in another female because the women can't fight the men. Like, you know, with a Romeo Must Die movie where it just gets a little bit ridiculous. So I would say like in action movies, if bitches are trying to kill each other, then yes, a man can like slap a woman. If she's got like a ninja star and like a samurai sword coming at you, then feel free to slap a hoe because she gonna come for you.
Oh yeah, that's gonna work. You're gonna slap a girl with a samurai sword. I'm running, Kong. I'm going to run. Uma Thurman coming at me with a fucking sword. You think I'm just gonna be like, oh, I think that's correct. I don't have to worry about getting canceled if I slap her. No, that's of course. I'm not gonna be worried about getting canceled. That's the thing. I would love to live to be canceled if I slap Uma Thurman.
So maybe he meant within the context of James Bond, but I mean, it can't be because he stood by that comment for years, decades.
I don't know, old ass hoe, ass hoe white guy likes to smack women around. Not
and we all know James Bond treated women with the utmost of respect.
Well, that's true. That's very true.
Okay, thank you for that, Veronica. We're gonna wrap up now with our movie of the week, which, you know, we always take our theme from the movie of the week, and that's why our theme this week was the intersection of Asian and Black culture, because our movie of the week is Rush Hour, starring Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker. And, you know, this was really a blending of the cultures at a time when I was growing up. It was, like, a huge movie where I grew up. I must have seen it multiple times. Saw part 2, part 3, which kind of sucked. But it's okay. We could always go back to the original. We own the soundtrack. Aaliyah. You know. Oh, no. I don't know if Aaliyah was on it. Anyway, I'm getting the movies confused. Anyway.
That's another Black Asian movie.
Anyway, that was Romeo Must Die. But anyway, this movie was like everything where I grew up. This shit, like Chris Tucker, he was barely in any other goddamn movies. It was just this franchise, and just this franchise alone made him a huge star. So let's head over to Leonard first. On what are your thoughts? Let's get some deep character writing analysis on Rush Hour.
Let's really break this movie down.
On these classic movie, remember.
It's a classic movie with classic three-act structure. I don't know, whatever. It was all right. It was an all right movie. It was had its moments, you know? Like, I mean, any Jackie Chan movie is essentially just a vehicle for fight scenes, right? That's all it is. It's kind of like... And it had a more cohesive plot than porn, I guess. right? It's just, you're just making excuses for fight scenes. And at least this way, like, one of the fight scenes was set off by, like, a misunderstanding between black, like, an Asian trying to appropriate, well, is it black culture or is it white culture that black people then reappropriated to make it less hurtful? You know the scene I'm talking about. Like, the when he's in the pool hall, mm-hmm. and then he says the N-word.
Yes,
and
yeah.
And then they beat the crap out of him, they try, and then he just kills everybody. Which actually really seemed unjust, right? Because Jackie Chan was totally in the wrong. I mean, he didn't understand why, but he's totally in the wrong. And then all these guys got beat up for it. But yeah, it was an okay film. You know, I hadn't seen it in a long time. I rewatched it for this. I mean, do I regret rewatching it? No. But I could have used my time better, I'm sure. Like, I don't think, like, my opinion of the movie changed since the first time I saw it. Like, my impression was pretty much like, yeah, okay, whatevs. It's okay. It's fun. But it's not like, it didn't change my life the way it apparently changed Vong's.
Yeah. It's on a pedestal to be called. I can't let that go.
I do like that the villain is the white guy. Like, literally the villain of this movie is colonialism. And I think that's great.
Yeah. So ahead of its time.
Like, he's literally stealing art. Like, so yeah, basically it goes right back to everything we're talking about. Like, don't fucking steal, like, you celebrate it, but, you know, don't appropriate and say it's yours. Anyways,
okay, let's head on over to Ronica. What were your thoughts on Rush Hour?
I mean, I'm not gonna, not a classic. I was excited when it came out because it was like, you know, for me, the, you know, the black Asian, I was like, woohoo, my world is here. But I don't know if I was as excited for those sequels as you were, Vong. I was entertaining back then. It was entertaining for me now, but mostly for the fight sequences. I can't stand Chris Tucker's voice. It's like, it's just a certain pitch, and it's like fingernails on chalkboard for me. And I have to deliberately tune it out. Like soca music, that's a different story. I just argued with my friends about that. Sorry, those who like soca music.
Have you seen Fifth Element, Veronica?
Yes. Not in a long time, but
what do you think of Chris Tucker's voice in that one? What do you think of Chris Tucker in that one? Because it's such a different character.
What do I think of him now? I don't even think of him because his voice had such an impact on me in Rush Hour that I refuse. Like, anytime I think of him, I just hear his voice and I can't do it. I would rather watch a Madea movie. Anyway, I liked it. It's fun. I liked that it was both equal in terms of stereotypes. So there was equality there. They filled the diversity quota very efficiently. There's a black lead. There's an Asian lead. They threw in a Latina cop just to make it well-rounded. Unfortunately, she passed away. Did she pass away before the sequels?
She passed away?
Yeah, Elizabeth Pena.
Oh, that was Elizabeth Pena. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. She was in Colors too, by the way. So she, yeah. But I mean, I like the soundtrack. I feel like I have to like it because Vong likes it so much. I feel guilty for not loving it the way you did.
No, I feel like every movie we've had on so far, I've given two Asian thumbs up. Because basically anything with an Asian lead, I'm gonna say yeah. I might be a little bit biased toward all things Asian, but you know, someone's got to be. But hey,
I liked it.
Yeah, it's I honestly thought it was a fun movie. It was a fun movie back then. It was still a fun movie now. I'm probably gonna watch it again after this, because I had so many computer troubles that I had to like watch it while like doing all the programming for this week's show. And I didn't really get to like absorb all the depth and the details. I feel like I need to go back in, you know.
You know, I really want to explore the themes.
Why didn't it win any awards?
Hey, if there were awards in Winnipeg and Scarborough, man, this would be number one movie of the decade, sure. Probably. It was huge.
You know who else was in there too that we overlooked is Christopher Penn.
Who?
I don't know who that is.
Sean Bean's brother.
I'm in. Okay.
Yeah, I will give a shout out to Ken Leung, of course. Super famous. I think he was like Mulan's dad in the newest movie.
That's
so,
right.
No, that's Sima.
That's right. Yes.
Oh Ken no, Leung I'm getting them mixed else. Up.
Ken Leung is a different actor. Ken Leung's a dude from Lost.
Oh, yeah, he was the evil guy. Oh, sorry, okay.
Sima, you're thinking Sima.
Yeah, okay, Sima, yes. This is the young version of Mulan's dad, and he definitely looks a lot better when he's young. He kind of let himself go in Mulan, but, you know, it is what it is when you get old.
By the way, this movie did win awards. It won awards.
It did?
No, the Blockbuster Entertainment Award for Favorite Duo.
Oh my God, hello. Blockbuster.
That's basically an Oscar.
Wow. Those $3.99 movie nights. Yeah, you're right, actually.
I'm pretty sure it must have won, like, an MTV Movie Award.
Yeah, for Best On-Screen Duo.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
That Popcorn Moon Man thing. So that wraps up our show. I want to thank our panelists, Leonard Chan and Veronica Antipolo, and I want to thank you, the listeners, for watching us. I know we've been gone for a couple weeks, but we are back, and this is our regularly scheduled time. I've been The Vong Show, and that's what's up.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.